And welcome to the Tater Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Tater. With me is Phil Conlon. How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
We're going to be talking, we hope, shortly to someone from the Syrian-Canadian community. They had an excellent demonstration on Saturday. I was very proud to be there and attend, and I saw many good friends and people from the Peace Alliance and the... So Zafar Ben-Gaish, by the way, Zafar Ben-Gaish is going to be on the show at later at about 5:30. We need to talk about what is going on in the battlefront of Syria. You see what I got on here, Phil?
On my written, that's yes.
Hands off Syria, an armband. And
that's a wristband, Phil. That's on your wrist.
What do I call it?
You called it an armband, but it makes you look like you're a patient. So you're a patient in the...
yeah.
Okay. And the hands-off Syria award.
With me, everything becomes an armband. Yeah. I have delicate wrists. This is, you're listening to Tater Report. It's CIUT 89.5 FM. I want to just tell you what the slogans were for that demonstration. It was no war on Syria, no intervention, no sanctions, and no claims of weapons of mass destruction, and no new wars. And hands off Syria, which is, I have as my wristband, as you point out. And there are various other slogans. We hope to be talking shortly with someone from the Syrian community who organized it. They had a very nice, huge flag of Syria. It's very important for Canadians, too. It is not a healthy phenomenon to see countries coming and going, flags being pulled down, countries being smashed and divided up. You know we're living in some kind of a period of neocolonialism. When editorials are written in like the Toronto Star, Globe and Mail, and saying such things as, well, Syria will never be the old Syria. Well, yes, it will. If we respect international law and borders, etc., it will be one. And it's very much in the interest of the Canadian people that the sovereignty of Syria be protected, and that foreign powers not get involved. And when I say that, of course, that's a wish. In fact, foreign powers are very deeply involved. The United States, overtly through its president, has said that the president of Syria must step down. One leader of one state cannot tell a leader of another state that he has to step down. Now, it of course flatters American pride and arrogance that they could say to Mubarak, "Goodbye, Mubarak," or they can say to Saddam Hussein, "Goodbye." That they take pride in the arrogant display of their power. However, it is highly destructive of other people. And that is something they're trying to apply today to Syria. And fortunately for the world, the Syrian people have remained basically unified in the face of aggression from outside and at their borders by states that should be condemned, such as Jordan and Turkey, who are allowing... armed groups of marauders, to put it, and by the way, no exaggeration, kidnappers, cannibals, to be armed in Turkey and in Jordan, to be trained by American CIA, and to be financed by the sheikhs and emirs and princes and kings of the oil states, which are absolute monarchies, for them to arm marauders to come across and... those things are acts of war. Syria has to be stoical and just take the blow in a sense. They have every right, of course, to counterblow if they wanted. But that, of course, is they call that reason to state. They're fighting for their survival. They have an army. And by the way, the demonstrators recognize the importance of that army. And by saying one army, one flag, one nation... And the army of Syria has the duty to protect. That is their duty. Now, there's a woman who won a PhD in giddy conversation at cocktail parties. Her name is Samantha Power. She advises the president. She has a PhD in chattering, and she has a PhD in butting into other people's affairs, literally and figuratively, by the way. And she says that America has a responsibility to protect. They have no such responsibility, none whatsoever. But the army of Syria has a duty, absolute duty to protect the Syrian people. And they have not been broken up. They have not been divided. And indeed, they have held up very well against enormous pressure. And they scored a recent victory. I'm surveying, if anybody wants to know, it's Taylor Report, and we're surveying recent history. And we might, we may not, we're doing our best to speak to someone from the Syrian community, and later we'll talk to Zephyr Bangash. But I think it has to be noted, the Syrian army actually scored a great victory, and therefore they have more trouble now in the sense that now the Gulf states are panicked. Now Egypt is upset. Now Turkey is becoming turbulent because this great idea of smashing Syria and to winning favors and handouts and armament from the Western states of France, Britain, United States, that is all in doubt because the Syrian army was able to defeat these terrorists in this place called Qusair. And pardon my pronunciation, but I'm not a Syrian, so Qusair. And when they did that, interesting turbulence broke out. We're getting reports now, for example, we're getting reports that the government of Qatar may be in a transition state, that I think he's called the Emir. It's a family thing called Qatar. It belongs to his family, and they take turns being the boss. Once in a while, they strangle each other in a bathtub because, you know, that's how you have a smooth transition of power in an oil emirate. And so he doesn't want to be, you know, strangled in a bathtub. So he apparently is going to hand over to a prince. At least that's today's news. I would say that the defeat of the terrorists at Qusair is led directly to this problem. Because Al Jazeera belongs to the family of the emir. They own it. And they've been triumphantly announcing that they're about to overthrow Assad, and they've been financing and arming these people. So, you know, it has a shock effect back at headquarters. If you send people out to do a job and you put your reputation on it, and other people in the room say, you know, I don't think this is a very good idea, and if it all goes smash, the people who said, I don't think this is such a good idea, become the leaders. So we're at a rather interesting point where U.S. diktat is very much in question. And the performance of the Syrian army is a reason that there is trouble in the region for some of these leaders who had been threatening President Assad. But remind everybody, Assad leads a government that is a secular republic. The last time I remember such a display of arrogance and desire to destroy a republic that got the world's attention, really got its attention, was when Franco of Spain, with his fascist terrorists, attacked the Republic of Spain and got a no-fly zone handed to him by Hitler and Mussolini. Their air force took over the skies of Spain and bombed the Spanish people. And they bombed until they had put Mr. Franco in power and destroyed the Spanish Republic. So that is a kind of issue that is at stake. It is a similar thing. And here we have really nasty elements in the Toronto Star and the Globe and Mail and, of course, the Toronto Sun, which is, you know, drags its knuckles along the pavement and writes with crayons. But they all agree to turn this into sectarian war. They do not refer to the president of Syria without calling him an Alawi and without telling everybody the Sunnis are the majority in the country and such things. Well, the majority of Sunnis are supporting President Assad of Syria. And President Assad of Syria never uses sectarian language. It is the government vocabulary does not permit that. It is a republic. All the religions have protection under the state. But you have, in being incited by the Saudi government, the concept of sectarian war, which would divide and conquer all the peoples of the Middle East on behalf of the great character in Washington, whoever it might be. And by the way, I hope people are now bored with the idea that it makes any difference whether you have a Bush, a Truman, an Eisenhower, whomever. It's the same show, guys. It's time to grow up now. So that's where we are. There are other elements to this, but I would just go back to this point. The other day in the Irish Parliament, Phil, you might have been one of the people to show me, but an actual parliamentarian stood up and said, "I don't get you guys at all." And you know, incidentally, bless Ireland. It legally and constitutionally, Ireland is neutral. Ireland doesn't join these great alliances and et cetera. They actually follow the principles of the original founder of the United States, George Washington, who said, never enter into entangling alliances. Don't do it. Of course, in long since, America has lost its mind and lost Washington, lost the whole idea. And they've become, I'd say, barking mad on the issue. But Ireland does have that position, and can you tell us her name, Phil, and what she said?
I'm going to look the name up.
I'm going to tell you her name. Her name is Daly. She's right. Apparently a socialist.
She sits as an independent. She was elected with one of the Irish socialist parties. Yes, very much like that. And she actually told the Taoiseach, the Prime Minister of Ireland, while he sat there and looked really grim-faced, that he should dress up like a leprechaun, put stars and stripes on top of his head. I just said that in the parliamentary debate. And I'm thinking, I never heard anyone like that in the Canadian Parliament.
We lost Roy O'Brady. Perhaps he came back in the spirit of this young woman who got up in Parliament and stood up for the dignity of Ireland. Now, we don't have anybody in the Canadian Parliament, no one, who's standing up and saying anything, nothing. And they're all kissing and hugging and patting Bob Rae on the back. What I'd say to Bob is, why didn't you say there are no weapons of mass destruction? It is America lied to us when they said that there was weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And this looks like a crock. This looks like a lie about chemicals. In other words, why can't we have someone who would say, let's behave like Canadians. Let's have our own investigation. Suppose we had a sovereign country, suppose we had a country of self-respect. And America said, we found they use chemicals. Well, they said, according to our history, you're not always truthful. So while we take it and we've heard what you say, we're going to have to answer to the Canadian people, which means, since, by the way, the Canadian people are skeptical and opposed to getting involved in Syria, but they should say, it's more important now to get to the bottom of these matters. Is it true that there's a cannibal leading a militia? Yes. Is it true kidnappers are leading militias in Syria? Yes. Well, report back to the Canadian Parliament and make recommendations. Do something about this. Don't follow Obama over the cliff. And by the way, if he doesn't look out, he may be getting himself into something he can't get himself out of. Not that it's my problem or your problem, but the American people, everybody needs to wake up.
Phil, her name is Claire Daly, and I'll just give our listeners a quick taste of what she sounded like on the floor of the Irish Parliament.
You're not going to try to. Are you going to imitate her voice?
I can't imitate her voice. She sounds wonderful. Is this person, meaning Obama, going for the Hypocrite of the Century Award? Because we have to call things by their right names, and the reality is that by any serious examination, this man is a war criminal. Well, that's certainly some very, very blunt speech, and you're not going to hear that in the Canadian House of Commons.
Well, by the way, and when you saw them, incidentally, go find the footage. I recommend it to everybody. Yeah. They actually were curled up and nervous looking because they were saying to themselves, Obama's going to be on my case now, wanting to know, you let that woman run me down? I mean, did you say you wanted to trade? Or did you say you wanted to borrow some money? Or did you, you know? Don't do that. They were thinking of what they were going to have to answer. You know, this is the peasant population, and peasants have a few leaders. And these leaders are saying, don't say these things. No, this is very a highly important issue. It has to be addressed. Now, listen, I say again. The Syrian community called that demonstration to Parliament, Queen's Park, on Saturday. And it, despite rain and threat of rain and all that, they did it. The spirit of all the best in the Canadian people, as believers in Parliament, believers in democracy, believers in accountability, was expressed through that demonstration. That they were there, and what they were demanding, every single thing they asked for made sense. And particularly, I would say, reopen the consuls. These are people, like all Canadians, pretty much, two-thirds of the population are come from various places in the world, and there are consuls here from the old countries from which they came, etc. And they all coordinate and make life livable for these communities here and abroad and whatnot. And the embassies and consuls in Canada are particularly important. And it just throws a monkey wrench into the daily life of people for no good reason. This is a time to have embassies open. When you have a possible war, it is time to have diplomacy. Talk. I'm quoting Winston Churchill, who put his face into a few wars, some of which he shouldn't have. He said, jaw is better than wah. Man was not a poet. But talking is superior to warfare. I shouldn't have to explain that. But diplomacy is very important. But Canada's playing a game of passive aggression. When you say, I'm closing that embassy, you're saying, I don't recognize you. And therefore, if there is a kidnapper and a cannibal with oil emirate money who's been paid to kill people, and no matter who, by the way, a terrorist does not care who he's killing, because the idea is to create terror. When that occurs, when you close an embassy, you are inciting the terrorist to strike. And they treated the victory over the terrorists by the Syrian army here was, they almost put black squares around their editorials. Oh my goodness. The Republican government of Assad has won a victory over these people who we can't even name. We don't know who they are. Nobody acknowledges where they get the weapons. You talk to one of their leaders, and their leader always said, I don't answer to anybody, but I kill people. I don't like Alawi. I don't like Sunni. I don't like Shia. By the way, just for a point here, these terrorists who masquerade as Muslims, I have to say, of course, a kidnapper and a cannibal are excluded from membership in Islam. I'm an amateur at this, but I know that's a fact. You can't do that. But when they kill, they are killing Sunnis. Now, the Toronto Star claims this has something to do with Sunni Islam. No, this is a political power struggle, and they are aiming at people who don't obey them. And some of the most revered leaders of the Muslim community of Syria have been murdered. They've been blown up inside their mosques. And these are not Shia. And they're not Alawi. They were Sunni who would not take the orders of Saudi Arabia. So anyway, the House of Qatar is having a little trouble tonight, and we'll be following that. Actually, Zafar Benghazi is coming up at 5:30. We'll put all the burden on him to speak to this. Now, Phil, we have an announcement. Tuesday, no? We don't have an announcement. I see. Well, it turns out we don't have an announcement. Even that comes as news. It ticked to me. Now, in the U.S., they're calling for National Days of Action. The organization called ANSWER, June 28 through July 15, June 28 to July 15, National Days of Action called by these are peace organizations in the U.S. I'm sure Canadian Peace Alliance is probably involved as well. There are other organizations you should check. I'm going to remind you of some websites. Please go to stopnato.com, or you just go to Rick Rozoff, R-O-Z-O-F-F. Very wise man. We have him on the show. But if you put his name in, put Stop NATO after, you'll get to his website. He gets a daily update. Like, for example, today he has the update on the CIA training of Syrian insurgents in Jordan before 2011. In other words, long, long ago, they had this plan. I sometimes mention, I was once in the Marine Corps. I recall being involved in a mock invasion of Cuba. Now, the invasion never happened, at least not ours. We did, but we were ready. We were practicing. But you'll be happy to know, we won. We had a mock war, and we won. That's the best kind. And so, now, other news. I want to make sure that we're doing news and commentary here. And I do congratulate the Syrian community for calling that demonstration Queen's Park. I hope they call some more. And this Mr. Snowden, who is, they call the whistleblower, has made available to the world information that the U.S. has hacked everybody, including probably CIUT. They probably took all of our calls today. They didn't, and screwed us up, probably. But he's a major figure, very intelligent guy, worked with the CIA, et cetera, and he was in Hong Kong. Now, the U.S. immediately contacted Hong Kong, and they said, listen, Hong Kong, you have to turn him over to us. He's a bad guy, and we want him back. And Hong Kong, there were three pieces of news that I really enjoyed. Hong Kong answered the letter, and it's a small place. It's autonomous, but it's, of course, part of China. But the officials in Hong Kong said, we've received your request, and we are examining it because you allege that he is a bad fella. And so we're not saying no. We would like additional information. This is what states do. We want additional information showing us that he is, in fact, what you would describe him as, a criminal. And having said that, we also have a request of you. Mr. Snowden has provided us with documents which indicate you hacked into our security, the way we protect the people of Hong Kong. You have hacked all of our systems, according to this information. Now, we would like more information on that. If you could kindly inform us as to whether or not you have done this, and then to what extent, because, you see, that's not your business to do. So could you please reply to us ASP, is that what it is, ASP? And then, of course, their next message was, oh, by the way, he's flown to Moscow. I don't know where he's gone next. But the part you want to pay attention to is we understand he hacked into the United States government, hacked into us. Now, remind yourself, go back 3 months. Joe Biden, Samantha Power, Hillary Clinton, Billy Clinton, we're all talking about the Chinese are hacking us. Oh, they're hacking us. And that's almost war, you know. You hack us, boy. That's almost war. And then Mr. Snowden shows up in Hong Kong and says, hey, guess who's hacking everybody? All the wind has been gone out of the sails because the U.S. was actually talking itself into snorting and clawing at the earth, you know. Because, you know, it's such an innocent republic. It never molested anybody. It's just put upon. The people hate their freedoms and all that. But here they were caught out, and their own guy said, no, here's the stuff. I worked there. This is what they did. Of course, he shared with us some psychological insights into NSA. He said, those guys are really vicious. The people he worked with are ruthless. Mr. Snowden? I'm not surprised, actually. Hey, I got another Chinese story in Hong Kong apropos of that. The New York Times has published a story about the lawyer named Chan, I think, who was an American darling. They found him deep in China, and he was a civil rights lawyer, and he was a hero, and he was all kinds of things. And he was under house arrest because he had been breaking Chinese law. But not that anybody knows or respects Chinese law, you see. The Americans had declared him a hero. So he escaped from house arrest. And I wanted to remind you what happened. He went to the U.S. Embassy, and then they negotiated his departure from China when he could have been arrested. But a detail in the story that always struck me, he's in Beijing, and he's in the suburbs. He is not in the U.S. Embassy. He's in the suburbs. And they make a phone call to the embassy, and they say, well, we have a little problem here. We think we're being looked followed and whatnot. Could you come and pick him up? The U.S. Embassy sent a car, and they went into the suburbs and picked up this man and brought him to their embassy. You try that in Canada or try it in the U.S. You in for big trouble. But that was all considered, was that fun? That was exciting. They drove through the streets at high speeds and all that baloney. Anyway, so he comes to the United States, where it turns out his adoptive political parents are actually right-wing American Tea Party types, located in Texas, almost wall-to-wall Baptists. And they like his position on abortion. And so they want to make him into the front for their campaign. Well, of course, Obama and his gang don't really want to see that happen. So they gave him, he was given a scholarship at New York, NYU University. His family was flown over from China, all of his children, given money, given place, given everything. But then one day, they say, well, actually, we'd like you to go out and make a living or something. You're just sitting here. And then he says, hey, wait a minute. I just noticed something. When I arrived, the guys in Texas gave me a bunch of things. They gave me an iPad. They gave me a phone. They gave me a Skype and all. And they're all bugged. Since he has arrived in the United States, he's been walking around with bugged gear provided by his American friends. They watch him more closely than the Chinese ever dreamed of watching him. By the way, we don't even know who that is. Somebody has decided to get in his hip pocket and live with him, and he doesn't move, talk, breathe without their knowing. But they brought him to the United States, and because he's a champion of freedom, and he doesn't like a police state. Well, hey, you're right. That's a police state that's run by a country sheriff somewhere. Now you're in the big time, kid. Now the CIA, the FBI, the NSA are going to make sure that they will order your breakfast for you. Anyway, what a lesson! What a joke! They made a big, freedom this, freedom that. What malarkey! So I think we've covered a lot of the material. I got to mention a name. Do you know the name? What's his name? Finkelstein, who spoke out on years ago, and Norman Finkelstein. Yeah. He jumped ship. He's making a Dershowitz of himself. He's now appearing at, programs, and he's calling the boycott and whatever it is, BDS, he's calling them a cult. And it's really quite amazing meltdown to watch. But if you're not aware of this, there's more and more reportage of it. But I really recommend people catch up on that. Now, did I tell you also to go to gowans.wordpress.com? He was on our program last week. Steve Gowans, and June 22, he wrote a new piece about Syria. It is being talked about a lot, but the best place to get it is gowans.wordpress.com. And if you want just a kind of very smart, professorial, humorous commentary on the daily production of propaganda in the West about Syria, Palestine, etc., I recommend The Angry Arab, and I always have to put in a little asterisk. I don't know. I don't agree entirely with his analysis, and he would say, thank you, Phil, I don't agree with you either. But I sure respect people who respect the facts and the information, and who can, as he can do, chapter and verse, show the hand of colonialism in the Middle East. He's a brilliant guy, and he's a lot of fun to read. Provided, as I say, you have your own political, whatever it is, but go to The Angry Arab because you get a daily update on what's going on. He can be a little morbid. He said he heard a rumor recently that one of the princes of Saudi Arabia was ill, and he said, oh, that's interesting. Well, I have my shovel ready. So I said, It's a, what do you call that kind of humor? It's black humor. So I think we should take a break. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write us, taylor@ciut.fm. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We hope to talk to Zafar Bengage.